it awakens the most beautiful emotions in me, and it motivates me beyond what I've ever dreamed of, actually, and inspires me to play my best tennis. So, you know, I know that they want to get a scalp, they want to win, but it ain't happening still.
That is the perfect way to
very
end.
Humble.
Very humble, very talented. Novak Djokovic, huge congratulations.
Thank you.
It's nice that we could take an extended break. It's cool that the tennis tragic pays the bills the way it does. You know, you can just record every 3-4 months. There goes Al. Shit.
Just a minor setback in the show.
He said, Jesus fucking Christ.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, it was nice having Al Dawson with us. We'll carry his memory forward.
We will. Carry the torch. So the Wikipedia page shows all, like, I've never seen that before, what the protected rankings of the players actually are.
So are you investigating the Kei Nishikori draw situation?
Yeah, so he's got a protected ranking of 48.
48?
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, the protected ranking system is kind of odd. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So they must have, like, held his ranking in stasis from when he got injured the last time, whatever, and they've just preserved it.
Yeah, it's been a couple years. You'd think they would probably give him a wild card anyway, given that he was once a US Open finalist.
Yeah, he probably would have got a wild card anyway, but now they can use that on someone else.
That's true.
Marco Trungoletti.
What happened to Trungoletti?
He lost in the first round of qualifying.
Yeah, I feel like when I look at the qualifying ranks, it's usually, I'm like, oh, I kind of like that player, and then they lose. It tends to be more, you know, a little like more. There's more disappointment in the qualifying ranks than elation, at least this year, I suppose.
Yeah, I was following Nao Hibino, who's like been top 100 before, but she's been at out of the top 100, and I always look at her results. And she played a tournament in Europe for 250. I got in as a lucky loser and won the title. And then her ranking shot up to 80. And then I was like, oh, great. She'll be in the US Open. But she was the number one seed in qualifying and lost in the first round. I was like, that's a heartbreak. You were so close to just being in the main draw. And then,
right. I thought like top 100 qualified you, but I guess they like do the cutoff kind of early.
Yeah, no, she that 80 rank would have carried through. But so yeah, I don't quite get it. It could have gone down the sub. It might have been one more week after that where rankings could have changed.
Hmm.
Yeah, she had a great week in, I think, Austria. Which, because she won the singles as a lucky loser, and she won the doubles.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's pretty awesome.
And another lucky loser won a tournament. Saros Ferivas Tournament just won.
Yes, as a lucky loser, I saw that in Cleveland. Tennis in the land.
Tennis in the land.
They have this, the stadium is set up like under a bridge, and it reminds me of a pool I once swam in Sydney that's like kind of like right adjacent to a bridge. So if you're like up in the, and it sort of has like stadium seating. So if you sit up, you can see out and see the river and the bridge crossing over it. It's really beautiful. It makes Cleveland look beautiful. And I don't, you know, Cleveland is not really known as like an American city that's got a lot of allure these days, but it looks great on TV in the tennis tournament. So
What's it known for?
Cleveland, LeBron James. Yeah, Cleveland. I mean, Ohio, you know, Ohio's Midwest United States, like kind of salt of the earth. And Cleveland, you know, Cleveland's like one of these cities that's kind of fallen down a little bit. You know, its best days are behind it. But I don't know. I would have to do some Wikipedia research to kind of know what the industry is there. They're known for the Cavs, the Browns, and tennis in the land.
There's a whole subplot in 30 Rock where her partner has to move to Cleveland and she's just very underwhelmed by it. She just goes there and it's like, it's fine. It's nice, I guess.
Yeah, it's not the kind of city that people are like really pumped about moving to these days. At least not, you know, in my general cultural milieu.
Yeah.
But, you know, I live in, you know, hipster boho fucking Austin. So, you know, it's a different vibe here. And plenty of people would be like, why the hell would you move to Austin? A bunch of communists, psychopaths. Anyway, this is maybe our first dual slam episode because we never got a chance to talk about Wimbledon. And feels only appropriate to at least touch on the events of the day. Well, the day that happened a month and a half ago, I guess. One thing that stood out for me was, I don't know if it was when Djokovic beat Rublev or Sinner, but it was one of the last matches of the tournament, like kind of going, yeah. Like, and Novak was just looking imperious, you know, he just, you know, like he's like, these kids can't beat me. And he did this post-match interview where he, you know, he said, you know, he's like talking and being kind of himself and humble and, you know, whatever. And then he's just like, you know, I know all these guys, they want to get scalped, but it ain't going to happen, baby.
Did he say it like that?
No. He said it ain't happening or something like that. But in my mind, it was always, it ain't going to happen, baby. And the whole crowd, you know, Twitter and like his wife was like, I can't believe he just said that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yannick Sinner was like playing the Wimbledon challenges all the way up until like the semifinal or something. He didn't play anyone ranked in the top 70 or something crazy like that until the semis or quarters or something. It's just like, you're not really in this tournament, Yannick. You know, you're just playing basically challenges. It looks good that I think it was the semis actually, the first time he played someone in the top 70 or something like that. And yeah. This is the first time he's gone to the semis at the Grand Slam. And it's like, well, there's a reason. Yannick, the really obvious reason you made it to the semis this time, because you're playing the Wimbledon Challenger circuit right now.
Have you lost your belief in?
Oh, completely. No, that's not fair. That's not fair because they somehow still has a matchup against Carlos, which doesn't make any sense to me because he has a ceiling. I feel like he has this really, at the moment, he has a ceiling and it's like.
Right.
That being said, he's sort of like slowly getting better. Consistently, I guess that's the thing. He's just slowly getting better consistently, but it's so slow compared to some other people like Rune and Alcaraz. It feels like he's plateaued, but I think he's just actually maybe making really good, solid steps forward rather than crazy leaps forward. Haven't lost belief. Actually, that was too harsh. But he's just going a lot slower than some of the others, which could pay off. It might just have this really long, a long. Successful career in the top 5 or top 10 longer than any of these others. It could, I don't know. Yeah, it might happen. But I have some other people I talk to, and one of them about tennis, and one of them is a really big Sinner fan. And when he got to the semis, you know, they had all this belief that he could go to the final or something, you know, because he's been winning all these matches up until then quite easily. And I was like, yeah, just look at who he's been playing though. Like, can you just have a look at who the ranks of all these players. I've never heard of half the players he beat to get there. Like,
yeah.
Let's dial back here, though. You talk to other people about tennis?
I do, yes. Yep, that's right.
Oh, man. There's probably another group chat, Matt.
There is.
we gotta up our game. If we want to stay relevant, Tennis Tragic the Second is going to emerge and we're going to be left in the dark.
The Tennis Knobs.
The Tennis Knobs.
That's great. It's interesting how with these, I mean, Alcaraz has just like gone levels beyond everybody from his generation, the generation after him, the generation after that. Like, and yeah, there are a few matchup problems for him. Like Sinner is one of them. Tommy Paul has beaten him twice. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah. He's got his number. Tommy Paul's got his number, which is great. I love, because I really like Tommy Paul, and I really love that he's somehow got Carlos's ticket. Like he's got him worked out somehow. I think because he just has a crazy powerful forehand as well. Tommy Paul goes for his forehand really, really hard and harder than most other players. I think he kind of matches Alcaraz's power there. I don't know.
Something well, and I think his defense also, like his movement's really good and he can get to those balls. Like Alcaraz just hits through some guys, you know, it's like Tsitsipas. He just has no hope. I mean, the pace like completely messes up his strokes and he just has nothing he can do, but Paul's much more solid against that particular player. So I, you know, if anybody else is going to win a slam for the next 10 years, it's like, there's going to be some, you know, scenario where like Sinner takes out Alcaraz and then Runa takes out Sinner. You know, like there's going to be some dominoes that have to fall once Djokovic is out of the way. But I don't think Alcaraz is going to win every slam, but it may not be far off.
Yeah. I don't think, I think the level that these guys have taken it to, the Sinner, Runa, and Carlos, I don't think Tsitsipas's backhand can handle any of those three anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you can be a top three player with a one-handed backhand against these people anymore. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I just...
Not that one-handed backhand.
Yeah, but I don't even know if any of them. I don't know if it can stand up to it because all those three, their backhands are so powerful and so fast. I just don't know if there's time to... and. I don't know if you can do it. I just don't know if it's possible anymore.
Time is a thing. Yeah, preparation is like...
But why has Tsitsipas beaten Sinner all the time in the slams then? Because he seems to have his number.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, seems like Sinner's been getting closer and I think he will flip that script, but...
That's true. I didn't realize actually their head-to-head was like that. But, so yeah, it's a good point. Hmm.
Well, like Tsitsipas has to mix things. If he wants to avoid that matchup, he has to mix things up. He has to throw in other things. He has to be able to use his net game and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. We'll see. I don't have much faith in. I mean, the thing is, like, I look at the draw right now, and it doesn't seem like the US Open draw. Alcaraz and Djokovic, they don't really have anybody who can threaten them. I mean, well, another guy who gives Alcaraz trouble has been Zverev, although he handled... Did he play? I think they played in Cincinnati. I'm not sure.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, I think he's in his draw at the moment, but come on, fuck Sasha Zverev. I mean, Alcaraz at this point in his career is just... I just don't see it. Like, I think they're headed to a final. I mean, unless somebody gets hurt, I think that's really the condition. And that, you know, that's kind of how I always felt about the big three. It's like, if they're healthy, you know, they're going to the semis or finals, depending on the draw.
Murray could just play Zverev in the third round. Mm. That would be good to see.
Yeah. That would be nice. I was like looking through the Wimbledon draws just to try and jog my memory, try to remember the storylines, like Christopher Eubanks and Svitolina had that run to the semis. Świątek, that was pretty sweet. I love when people beat Świątek. Did you guys see Coco Gauff beat Świątek? Like, I don't know if it was I think it was last week. It was in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch it, but yeah, I noticed that one.
Did she end up winning the tournament?
She did.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's good form ahead of the US Open.
Well, she's been getting crushed by it. Yeah. She's getting so one-sided. And now Brad Gilbert is on the team.
That's right. BG is there.
Yeah.
I wonder how often he uses the term fear hand when talking about.
Yeah. Because it's a big thing, isn't it? A bad forehand.
Well, right. But apparently everything I've heard secondhand about what Brad Gilbert's been doing is he's just trying to simplify and like not addressing the forehand, which is an interesting strategy. BG's known for his, you know, his tennis book Winning Ugly, which is, you know, it's like a mental game kind of treatise. You know, he was not the guy with the best physical gifts and still found a way to be a competitive player on tour. And Coco's got amazing talent, but that forehand, I mean, that's the thing. That's like the one shot. And even in some of these matches I watched her play, it's like, ooh, that's, I don't know how you're going to get through this with that shot. You know, she just unreliable breaks down.
Yeah, that's cool that he's on there though. I'm interested to see how she goes at the US Open now.
No pressure.
Well, yeah, now that she's got that win under her belt over Iga, maybe she's going to feel a bit more relaxed about, because I think that was starting to be a bit of baggage there, and maybe she was getting a bit scared about it. I mean, she even said she didn't want the Djokovic-Monfils record. She's like,
right.
She's like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be Gail in this scenario.
Yeah, those guys just played again, and it did not go Monfils' way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty startling. So yeah, it was a big deal for sure for her to get that win and build that confidence. And yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is like, I am still blown away. She's 19 years old, Coco.
I know. I keep forgetting too, because she's been around consistently since she was like 16 or 17 or something. But she feels way older. Yeah. So she's going to be fine.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what else? Let's jump over to the US Open. We're going to just go all over the place, I think.
Yeah.
You guys notice anything in particular about the draw?
I was just trying to see what roadblocks Rune could have. And I don't know. I guess there's maybe a potential TFO Rune quarter, maybe? Am I looking at that right?
Rune has not been playing well. I feel like he's been losing early. And I thought he had a tough first rounder. Let me see. I mean, right. He got a quarter for the first time.
It's Caballos Baena at the start, so he should be fine.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
He could play Rude in the fourth round. Tiafoe could.
Right. I was keeping an eye on Foe's draw because
I think Tiafoe takes Rude pretty easy.
He's also been a little disappointing this summer. Like it felt, you know, he just got into the top 10. He definitely seemed like, all right, he's starting to become a serious force at the US Open, US hard courts. But like, you know, he played in the Washington tournament, like Kevin Durant was present at one of his matches won. Yeah. But then he went out in the next round, like he didn't make a big run there in his home tournament. Rune might get Lehechka in the second round. I was just watching Lehechka play Sebastian Baez in the final of North Carolina.
Winston-Salem.
Who won that? I'm willing to have it spoiled.
I think Lehechka. Let me have a look.
It's Lehechka Karatsev in the first round. I mean, those are like two dangerous sleepers for Holger.
No, it was Baez in straight sets.
Baez took it. Wow, that's impressive. He's definitely losing the first round now. I'm pretty sure he drew Čorić, who he just beat.
Who? What?
Yeah. He drew, Sebastian Baez drew Borna Čorić in the first round at the US Open. Okay. I mean, he just beat him, but like, I don't know. I just don't trust the title win right before the US Open. It just never seems to work out. It's like you're putting too much effort in.
Yeah.
And you got to go out and play a guy like Čorić first round. I don't see it. But who knows?
Is this Monfils' last slam?
I don't know if he said that.
He's been playing all right, eh? He's been like getting some wins.
He has. And
He's playing Tara Daniel in the first round, who qualified.
He beat Tsitsipas in Canada. Yeah, he's had some nice little runs. I mean, he got to play Djokovic. So he got his record to 0-19, which is impressive.
And at this point, he should just be going for like as many losses as he can. Just rack it up. Make sure no one can beat that win-loss record ever.
Try to see if you can get more career losses than he has Grand Slams.
Yeah.
It's going to take some effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have to play pretty well to, I guess you could meet early on, but just to be able to play him, you know what I mean?
To meet them that many times.
Yeah.
Right. And I think he's going to be seated in events, like maybe not in slams, but, you know, I feel like he's been working on his ranking pretty nicely.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Might stick around.
Mutet Murray first as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Mutet hasn't been doing that much lately. Mutet, yeah.
Yeah, but he's like one of those guys who can just like throw a monkey wrench in the proceedings. I think Murray will be okay there, but Murray, again, like I was actually checking Murray's rank because he's still unseated. He's like 35th in the world or something. Ugh,
constantly just outside.
Which is pretty brutal. So he's going to get Dimitrov in the second, probably, and Zverev in the third. Oof. If he gets that far. It's like, that's not an easy way into a slam. Like,
no.
What about Christopher Eubanks? You guys into the Eubanks story?
I'm into Eubanks. Yeah, I like him.
Single-handed backhand.
Yeah, I love it. And he's so tall as well.
So tall, string bean tall. Mm. Yeah, he was fun.
Yeah, I hope he goes deep, but he hasn't really backed it up since Wimbledon that much. But I hope he can. Has he got Korn in the first?
Seeded.
Yeah,
he's got himself a seed now. But yeah, I mean.
Can play Tsitsipas if he gets that far.
We're in what round?
In the third round.
Oh, yeah. That would be a rematch of Wimbledon. Mm. Tsitsipas has got Raonic in the first round, which makes me a little nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be.
Why is Milos Raonic still playing? I think he's on the verge of retirement.
I thought he had. I think everyone thought he had, and then he just started entering tournaments again. And was like, "Oh, you're still here, okay?"
He's not the only big surfer who's back.
John Isner.
John Isner's playing his last tournament, but there's another big South African.
Oh, Kevin Anderson.
Kevin Anderson.
Yeah. Yeah, but he lost in qualifying.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's back, but not at a high level.
No.
Good.
Also, one's a finalist.
Yeah. He's pretty boring, isn't he?
Yeah.
How do you feel about Kei Nishikori's return, Al?
I love it. I love him. Where is he in the draw? I haven't actually noticed.
You do love him. I feel like he's a guy I've like slightly warmed to. I mean, I used to... Hate is a strong word. I mean... That's reserved for like the Zverevs of the world. Like, and even then I feel bad about using it, but like Nishikori, I mean, he's, you know, for me, the cardinal sin is just that you're boring or like a tennis robot, and he was pretty robotic, but you know, respect. Yeah. He really had a heck of a career for like an undersized guy. And you know,
yeah, I have a big thing for defensive players. That's my style. Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic, and Nishikori is one of them. So that's the style I like. Anyone who's a grinder and defensive player, they're gonna be pretty good in my books. So I would like to see him go deep. He's got a pretty easy first round and got a qualifier, and then it's Baez or Charic, so that's gonna be hard. That'll be if he's playing Baez, that's gonna be a 5-set deciding tiebreak, fucking marathon.
Yeah,
and then it's bad. Medvedev after that, and then Dimonor, all defensive grinders.
Yeah, yeah, they're gonna be. That's a grueling section.
Hmm. Dimonor had a run to a final. He got to the final in Canada, beat Medvedev. Pretty impressive. Yeah. Also, flirting with the top 10, but
yeah, he's slowly moving up.
I don't think he's gonna beat Medvedev at the Open. I think 5 sets is different.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting. It's like, you know, you can dissect the draw and look at all of it, and it all seems kind of pointless in the end. It's just going to be the real drama is going to be in the final. Like, how great is that rivalry, Al? Like, we've talked about it.
It's the best. This is like another, they're two defensive. They got attacking styles as well, but they're at the core of them are they're very defensive players, I think. And that's why I love, but the matchup is just so good. It's so good. And it's, I think it's even more exciting because the window is so small. Everyone knows it's like,
right,
you're not going to get it that many times. So really enjoy it while you can. And they've just lived up to it every time. It could have been such a dud. And everyone's like, oh, you know, this is going to be great. And it could have just been a dud. But every single time they come together, it's a classic, another classic.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that wasn't was when Alcaraz withdrew. But it was a classic until he started cramping.
And yeah, that's right.
Their first match on clay the year before, I think it was Madrid. Was amazing. Like, they just, I don't know, that the Cincinnati final, I know you didn't get a chance to watch it live, Al. Like, I just... You know, it was like I lost track of time, like while I was watching it. It was so captivating.
Yeah, and... I was watching the scores and I was captivated. Just watching the score tick over, I was like, it's juice, advantage, juice, advantage, juice, advantage, juice, advantage, juice, multiple times in multiple games. I was like, fuck. And they're not just normal games. It was like a set point or match point, advantage, juice, advantage, juice, advantage, juice. I was like, what the? How is this happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was exciting. It says something about a match if it's exciting to watch from the score.
Totally.
So, yeah, I hope that happens. I mean, really, yeah, you're right. This is all looking at the draws. Really, I'm just hoping everyone falls over and it becomes the top two players again play the final. That's what I really want.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I won't be disappointed if there's like some surprise for one of them along, or both, you know, along the way. I mean, certainly I don't want them to be unthreatened and for the matches to be boring. It still matters to the rest of the guys if they can, you know, make that semifinal run or whatever. But I mean, it's just, yeah, it's that good. And I love them both. And I just feel like throughout all of this, I'm just appreciating Djokovic more than ever. And I think he's as good as he ever was. So for all the talk about his window shrinking and stuff, I mean, the dude's 37. He's just such a freak of nature. I would not be surprised if he won a slam at 40. Like, I just, it's anything seems possible with him.
Yeah, I know. It is amazing how he's still going at a high level.
Yeah, and he will, you know, he's going to do the LeBron James thing of just keeping himself in a cryogenic chamber and like being so smart about it. So for the big tournaments, he is able to still perform.
And put his weird Iron Man magnet on while he's playing.
Right, he's got the chest piece, the nanotech, which such I think is just completely bullshit.
Yeah. He's a kook. He's a bit of a fruit loop, but I still love his tennis.
Yeah, I don't know. He's definitely one of those figures where I'm like, well, I don't agree with most of what he says or does, really, but he entertains the hell out of him.
That's right. Yeah,
pretty amazing to watch and to root for. Like that Cincinnati match, he was dead on his, like, it's amazing how narrow the margin is and how quickly it can change. Like, he really looked like he was punch drunk in the first set. It was hot, it hadn't been hot, so he was like completely drained out of it. He was up a break in the first set and then just kind of went away. And like, at that point, I'm making dinner and I'm thinking like, this is too bad. It's just not going to be a good match. And somehow he recovered from that, which is just, you know, for an older guy, like, it's one thing when you're younger, but the arc of that match is part of what made it so crazy. Like, I mean, Alcaraz had match point, you know, in the second set, and Djokovic had multiple match points for himself that were saved by Alcaraz being incredible. Like, it had it all. So hopefully we get it again, and it's not the only thing that is interesting on the men's side, but
yeah, I'm sure it won't be.
We should play the upset game to make sure that the rest of the draw is interesting for us.
Oh man, I forgot about the upset game. I guess we have to we have tomorrow.
yeah
let's dig it up. Let's play the upset game. That was a fun way to kind of like pay attention to some random stuff going on.
Hey, is Caroline Wozniacki playing this tournament?
She is, yeah. She's back. Talk about another comeback.
And she's got a decent draw. She's got a qualifier in the first round and then maybe Kvitova in the second round.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of her matches since she's come back, and she's gotten a couple wins against lesser players, but has struggled when she's come up against seeds. So I don't, I mean, Kvitova, it's just like, I mean, she's still got a seed. She could go to the quarters. Nobody would be surprised, but I don't really have deep faith in her. So I would be pulling for Woz for sure. It's great to see her back. It's just like, I always enjoyed watching her play. Like she plays a lot of tennis, you know, she keeps the ball alive constantly. I mean, you know, she doesn't make a lot of errors. She's just rock solid, like competitive, like, yeah, there's a lot to like there. So, and she married a Nick, which I, you know, also pleases me.
Did she?
Yeah. David Lee, former power forward for the Knicks. No, ex. He went to the Warriors and actually won a championship with them the first year they won. He was like a bench guy behind Draymond. Mm-hmm. A few time All-Star. He was great. He was like the best player on the Knicks in some of their dark years and kind of like still made them worth watching. Speaking of NBA players, but we should talk about the women.
Yeah,
just keep steering back to the men. But yeah, Jimmy Butler, Al, like, what do you think of his game, his all court tennis?
His all court tennis. What do you mean? He's actually him actually playing tennis. You mean?
You didn't see it? Did you see it, Matt? He came out as a ball boy.
He cannot play tennis.
Did he pick up a racket and play?
Yes, he played a point with Alcaraz and won the point.
I didn't say that part.
But like Alcaraz was not trying.
Yeah.
But then he did win the point against Alcaraz. Because he was just getting like the nicest possible balls, and Alcaraz was right at the net.
That's a good spot from Carlos.
Yeah, and then Jimmy Butler just smashed one at him.
He loves tennis, though. Like, even in breaks in the NBA season, he would go down to South America. I think it was the tennis was in Rio or something like that. He'd go down Carlos play in between games while the NBA season was on, you know, and then fly back up to Miami. And then he popped over to Wimbledon to watch Carlos's matches. Like, he loves it. And he's always sort of like posting little things of him watching tennis. Seems to be fully, deeply into tennis, which is cool.
Yeah, I've seen him I mean, he used to go hang out in Zverev's box, but maybe we just won't mention that anymore. I've seen pictures of him with Świątek. I've seen, like, he definitely loves it, but that's why it's so surprising that he was so bad. And, like, all the clickbait headlines were like, oh, Alcaraz, you know, loses a point to Jimmy Butler. And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if he played, Jimmy would not win a point.
It's always like that with, like, it's, you know, I do enjoy seeing celebrities or members of the crowd or ball kids play a few points, like seeing a mere mortal out there. But yeah, it was quite evident, though, from, you know, Jimmy Butler, the few shots we saw Jimmy Butler hit that.
I think it's more surprising when NBA players can't do it, or like athletes can't do it, though.
Yeah,
because, you know, when they look awkward, because I've seen Dwayne Wade do it as well. He's getting lessons. Huh. There's a big clip of him getting lessons, and he looks real like stiff and uncoordinated. He looks better, like he's getting better. But it's just surprising to see someone who looks so good on the court and can move so well just look like a deer in headlights on the tennis court. It's bizarre.
Yeah, well, tennis, it's just so technical, isn't it? It's like, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. There's so many elements to a stroke. It's like, if you don't have a natural feel for it and you've never really been shown and in practice that, like, yeah, you can look like a fool out there.
Yep. Well, good on Carlos for being a sport, but Butler, yeah. He needs to put a little work in on the court.
If he's going to make it on tour, he's got a way to go.
Right. It's like, you know, how like tennis players retire and go and play pickleball. I mean, NBA players, you know, they could have a second career. Tennis is easy compared to basketball, right?
Totally.
Totally.
But he loves it so much that he's even brought out a tennis apparel under his coffee brand merch. You know, Big Face Coffee. He brought out tennis merch.
Amazing.
Visors and wristbands and stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's so funny that that's still going. Big Face. Anyway.
All right. Let's get back to the women this year. Because we also didn't talk about, we could talk about the Wimbledon final briefly. Because, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a heartbreak because Jabeur got to her third Wimbledon final, third slam final after beating Rybakina and Sabalenka, and then lost Marketa Vondrousova of all people.
Oh my God. Jabeur, again, a heartbreak. Can't believe it. That's three slam finals she's lost.
Yeah. She might be, you know, it might be like a Halep or Wozniacki kind of situation where she just needs to take those beats and she's going to eventually get one. I still believe. I want to believe, but I don't think it's going to be this US Open that she breaks through.
No.
Even though she was in the final last year.
Well, let's not count her out. She's the number five seed.
Mm.
She made the final of Wimbledon.
Fair enough.
Let's give her a shot.
I feel like a couple of years ago she wasn't regarded as like a big match player or like somebody who was like a slam tough player, but she's kind of shown that. I mean, three slam finals out of the last five is nothing to sneeze at. That's pretty impressive. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But Vondrousova, though, I can't. She wins Wimbledon, and I'm talking about who she beat. You know, it's like she's just. I always just thought she was kind of there. She lost that final at the French to Barty a few years ago, and then kind of just went away. But she's kind of looking legit right now. I mean, she won Wimbledon.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah. She's an odd character. She's got all these like sketchy tattoos. Like she's like really into stick and poke or something. And she did this like photo shoot. I think it was like for Porsche or some magazine where they dressed her up in like this classic 70s like sweater, like casual fall weather, you know, like tennis court kind of gear. And she looks so like, it's such a spectacular, like it's such a striking look. And I'm like, who is this? It like changed the way I thought about her, sort of. I was like, but I don't know if that's really her. I feel like they're kind of like playing dress up with her a little bit. I just don't know who she is.
Yeah, same. I have no idea. I forgot she was even that one against Barty in that match.
She seems cool. Like in the Wimbledon run, she seems like a fun kind of person.
Yeah.
Seems cool. Mukova did well, didn't she, in Wimbledon as well? Did she make
it? I don't remember. She got to the French final, right? And then she just got to the final and lost to Goff in Cincinnati. So she is playing well, Mukova.
I like her. She's she plays all court.
Yeah, she does. And I feel like that's like it's important to have those players as kind of an antidote to the Świątek, Sabalenka, Rybakina trio.
Yeah, the disruptors.
Yeah, Jabeur is obviously like that as well. Just somebody who's not just playing baseline tennis most of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm like underselling those players a bit. I mean, they're obviously all extremely skilled. Like Sabalenka, just it doesn't look like she should be able to move the way she does. You know, she's such a big, strong woman, but like she's incredible. And I mean, Świątek, it's just, you know, you win four slams, you're you're pretty serious. So she'll be defending her title this time. And I will be rooting for her to go down, but I don't think it's going to be for a while. She's got a pretty easy road.
Swiatek.
Yeah, it's like Kudermetova and Cocheretto is the other seed in her like first little bucket. Ostapenko. Ostapenko's not going to beat her.
No.
So just get into a quarter for sure, at least.
Yeah, Goff.
It would be Goff in the quarters. Yeah, they're in the same quarter, which is sort of unfortunate. But like, yep, with that one match under her belt, maybe this will be different.
Yeah, hopefully. I'd like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. It like really warmed me to Goff to see her beat Swiatek. Like just... It does seem like there's something different going on there. She also won Washington. She won two of the last three events.
So oh, wow. Okay.
She's coming in pretty hot.
So, yeah. It's good.
She will have to play Mira Andreeva in the second round, potentially. Goff.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Andreeva and her played in the fourth round at Wimbledon. And then Andreeva won the first set and then like turned into a teenager and had a meltdown.
Yeah.
It's funny when Goff is like the elder statesperson.
Yeah, she was keeping it together, Goff. She was just keeping her head down and Andreeva just lost the plot. Like was getting angry at line calls and getting warnings for racket abuse and then arguing the point. I thought this is not good behavior, but then I had to check myself and realize that she's 16.
Right. And, you know, yeah. We've certainly had our moments on court, Matt, you and I.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got a little belligerent towards you, David. I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. It actually made me feel better about my own, like, fury when I play and play poorly, which is basically what happens when I play. my partner's playing regularly. Like she plays, you know, a couple times a week. She's super into it. She's like finding leagues. Oh, and nice. Like, I'm really like, cause I've, you know, my back problems have settled down and I'm getting into shape again. And like, I really want to get out there and see if she can kick my ass. I kind of like, I want her to beat me down, you know? But I don't know, you know? I mean, I have some pride. I'm going to go out there and try to win, but we'll see how it goes. You guys playing these days? You able to still play out?
I haven't been, but I'm wanting to start getting back into it. I think I'm signing up to a thing on Thursday night. I've been a bit sick. I've been having skin shitty things for a month, so I haven't been able to do much. No. But I signed up to this more than a month ago, just in the off chance that I might feel better, because all the spots book up really quickly, and I booked in and it's coming around, and I feel like I might be able to do it. So I'm pretty excited about that. Although it's like a UTR match, so it sort of counts to your ranking. So it's like, I don't really want to come back after months and fuck up my ranking, but I'm gonna do it anyway. I don't care. It's just, you know, it'll be fine.
What's your rating? But,
I think I'm about five. But okay. I think I float around five. I haven't checked for a bit, but it's about five. Yeah, it's good. It's a pretty accurate thing. Do you use it? Do you know about it?
I know a little bit about it. It's kind of objective in a way, right? It's like, oh, you can hit like a topspin forehand like accurately, or like it's measured, right?
It's like it adjusts. It sort of adjusts based on who you play. So if you play someone, if you go in at ranked three and you beat someone ranked five, your rank will jump quite a lot to like 4.5 or whatever. And so the more you play, the more it settles and it gets really accurate. So like in the end, if you're 4.6 or something and you go up and you play someone 4.6, that's going to be a very competitive, even match. Like really, really even. Like it's crazily accurate. It makes it really good if you're trying to find a partner and you're like, I'm UTR 5, and you find someone else is UTR 5, you're guaranteed it's going to be a good match.
Right.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. And it also keeps going, like, even if you're not playing, it keeps adjusting. So if someone that you beat, or someone that you lost to goes on and they start crushing everyone, then your rank will start rising, because it's like, oh, okay, they beat you, but it actually turns out that they're really good. So your rank adjusts after the fact. Yeah. So it keeps up to date, which is really, it's actually really effective. Yeah. It's good.
Interesting.
Mm.
I'm just reading about it, and it says on the Tennis Australia website that if you win more games, like even if you're losing, but you win an extra few extra games, and that can improve your ranking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very good. Very detailed.
I was just going to say that I have read that thing as well, this rating system that you were talking about, where it's like, it's based on what skills can you execute. Like if you can rally consistently, if you're able to
hit
slices.
Those ones don't work, because people overrate themselves all the time.
I think that's probably just an estimate for, like, as you're kind of getting started and you're not like playing a lot of competitive matches all the time. I think it's like,
but like
a way of calibrating.
But people who haven't played someone really good, they'll be like, yeah, I can rally really well. But it's just because you haven't played someone who can rally really well. You know, they don't understand what that means. You know what I mean? Right. Until you're like,
totally.
Like, I can rally really well, but they're just moonballing it over for 20 shots and no one's hitting it hard. And it's like, yeah, I can rally really well. Like, 8. I'll rate myself an 8.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so important to play people who are as good or better than you when you're trying to skill up, right? Like, Gamali's always complaining because she's like joined these social leagues, and she like every once in a while just gets paired with these people who like just picked up a racket and are idiots.
Yeah. It's so
like,
frustrating.
It's just like, I'm just not getting a workout. It's like a fucking waste of time.
That's why UTR is good. Try to get her to find leagues that use that. Sometimes there's a group, you know, where people try and find partners around Sydney, and sometimes people put their UTR. People come in the comments like, oh, who cares about your UTR? I'm just trying to have a hit. And it's like, yeah, well, that's the point. Like, I'm trying to, this makes it better for everyone.
Hit.
Like, yeah.
Proper hit.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll pass that along.
Wimbledon semi-finalist, former Wimbledon semi-finalist Tatiana Maria is up to her like highest ever, or almost to her highest ever ranking, just inside the top 50. And she won a tournament. She won a 125K, and she got to the semis of Tennis in the Land.
Hmm.
And she's cool. Remember, she's not probably not going to like have a massive run or anything at the US Open, but remember how she played in Wimbledon? She was like quite unorthodox.
Who's this, sorry?
Tatiana Maria.
Isn't she older? Isn't she like in
her
30s?
She's like 36.
Yeah. I think
she's had a kid.
The thing about the women's side is just we get those runs like almost every slam. Like somebody's in the quarters or semis who's just, you know, who's breaking through, young or old. Like it just, there's so much more variance that makes it pretty interesting. I'm keeping my eyes on like Kennen and like Layla Fernandez, I think, has had some good play lately, but she got paired with Alexandrova, who's also been playing well in the first round. Mm. It's just at any moment somebody could break through. I can't believe Maria Sakkari is still at 8. She just doesn't seem to be winning at all.
She might play Mukova in the 4th round.
Mm.
If she gets that far.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if she went out to Shmidlova in the 2nd.
Yeah.
That's sad. I don't like, you know, just like losing faith in somebody you really like to watch.
I wouldn't mind a Danielle Collins Coco Gauff 3rd round.
Mm. Yeah, that could be fun.
Collins, Venus Williams is playing.
Unreliable. Yeah, Venus is playing. She won a match or two this summer.
Yeah, she won a couple of matches.
I feel like her body, like she gets hurt. Like she just breaks down in these matches. And that's kind of the thing that's holding her back right now. I don't know if that's, she's just got Greek Minin. That's pretty winnable, but she could get to second rounder with Vekic potentially. Oh, I love they put her on Ash. They put Venus on Ash.
That's cool.
They did?
Yeah, they did.
Cool.
It's pretty nice. But yeah, Kennan's in that same section. Anna Bogdan, Kasatkina in the second, potentially. It's not a great draw. It's never easy when you're unseated. Not a great draw, not the worst. She's not running into, like, you know, if she's, I don't know what she's done since Wimbledon. We were all excited about her playing well suddenly, but I don't know if it's translated at all.
Who's her?
Sophia Kennan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I was like, she's back finally, but
she hasn't played. She was supposed to play in Washington and the match was canceled. So maybe she was injured. That sucks.
Yeah.
She's 93 in the world these days.
Yeah, that Wimbledon run would have helped for sure. What else? Anybody excited about a Jesse Pegula run?
No.
Yeah, I'm warming to her. I kind of like her.
Matt's not into it.
Boring. Ooh.
What's the problem? Is it that she's a billionaire, Matt?
That could have something to do with it. Let's see her and Goff play doubles. They always trouble my doubles specialists. So, you know, I get pissed off with these singles players coming in.
They're committed to the doubles. I mean, that's the thing to admire about them is that of the singles players, I mean, they are both contenders in the slams,
right,
in singles.
No, you're right.
Still playing doubles.
That is something to admire about them. They're like, they're actually true, like that old school dual competitors where they take both the singles and doubles draws seriously. You don't see that.
Yeah, I mean, if singles players are coming in, Pegula and Goff are not just singles players, they're both, but if other just singles players come in and beat your doubles teams, I think that says more about your doubles teams than it says about the singles players coming in. Get better at tennis.
In most cases, yeah.
Harsh, but fair.
That's why, like, that Kyrgios Kokkinakis run, like, that's pretty abnormal in this day and age.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad Nick's not playing.
No,
maybe he'll retire. Maybe he'll just go away.
He gets more embarrassing. I think he said some bad things about the Women's World Cup. Like just some kind of dismissive sexist things about, maybe they wanted to do some statue for the Matildas, the Australian women's football team that made the semis, and I think Kyrgios has weighed in and said like they don't deserve a statue or something like that.
What a dickhead. A plus dickhead. Definitely one of the top.
Yeah.
He's got it all. He's got the sexism as well as a big feature of his comments every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always kind of vacillated a little bit and enjoyed him at times. Certainly, I mean, he's a disruptor and that can be fun, but like, you have to be such a shit. That's kind of the essential question there. And I don't know. You know, I'd rather see, I don't know, there's just other people. Like, I'd rather see a, you know, Bublik. I'd rather see a Bublik happen. I'd rather see Davidovich Fokina, who, you know, like every once in a while, he just has a great run at a tournament. And I love watching that guy play. But he's just nuts. Like, he just implodes. And, you know, but it's just not, it's not directed at other people. It's just a self-directed implosion.
Hey, Dave, would you send the rules for the upset game again if they're easy at hand?
Yeah, let's roll that out and we'll commit our picks to Instagram.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, I'm in.
Sweet. Great catching up, guys.
Tragic on three. 1, 2, 3.
Tragic. Alex just leaves.
He left on that, huh?
I don't think he said. Maybe he said it.
Just get a bot to be Al if he didn't say that. chain post?
Yes, I will. Although we didn't get, I didn't ever get to deep fake his voice. He was kind of uncomfortable with that idea.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I've got Matt Black in case I ever need to fake your voice.
If I die, yes, dude, just continue on. Continue me on, will you?
Yeah, I will. In fact, I think we might have a more successful tennis podcast once we're both dead and it's Davey Gravy and Matt Black just continuing.
It's just good.
Tennis tragic forever, man.
All right, bro.
All right. Have a good one.
You too.
The Tennis Tragic thanks you for listening. All correspondence and feedback can be directed to tennistragicpod@gmail.com. And our Instagram is @tennistragicpod.